It is coming up on 6:30 here in Toronto, Monday on Overdrive. Gord Miller sitting in for Brian Hayes with Dave Festchuk. Bad loss for Milos Raonic today at Wimbledon. Really tough. Up two sets to love. He won 20 of his first 21 service points.
Man, his serve has been on fire. He
uncorked 33 aces in the match. Lost the third set, no problem. Got up in the fourth set, but then lost that and lost the fifth and is out in the round of 16 at Wimbledon. In a year when it looked like it was all going right for him. Healthy, finally, serving well, playing well, but a really disappointing pill for him to swallow. And joining us now from SW19 in London, I think that's where he stays, is our Mark Masters. Mark, are you in SW19?
Yes, I'm just at a flat. I can see the grounds of the All England Club from our balcony here. It's quiet. It's quiet right now.
It would be, because it's nighttime, yeah. And they don't play at night there. So, or normally don't play at night. Tell us a little bit. Give us sort of the top line on Raonic's match today.
Milos Raonic ran out of gas at the worst time. But I mean, even before he got to the later stages of the match where he was really starting to fade in the fifth set, he had a chance to serve it out in the fourth set at 5-3, and he just played a really loose game and maybe got a little bit tight. And, you know, your mind wanders, certainly knowing that the guy he would have played if he had won, Roberto Bautista Agut, is someone he's 5-0 against. I mean, it was all out in front of him on the table there to make another Wimbledon semifinal, and who knows, after that you give yourself the chance. So, you know, he got tight in that moment maybe a little bit, and maybe he goes back to the third set. He let Guido Pella off the mat, and he let the Argentine believe that he could come back. And the guy was a fighter. It was the first time he'd been this far to Grand Slam, right. And he's going to make the most of it. And, yeah, but the top line is Milos Raonic ran out of gas.
So you spoke to him after. I mean, how did he explain, you know, squandering a two-set lead?
Well, he was pretty, obviously, as you'd expect, crestfallen, really, really down. He didn't even want to talk about basketball, which is all he's wanted to talk about when we've been interviewing him throughout Wimbledon. Is,
well, no one's happy about basketball right now, Masters. Newsflash.
I said to him, at least it wasn't the Lakers, and he said, yeah, whatever, it's been a tough few days.
Yeah.
He was really plugged into this. He was actually saying he was happy that his matches were early, so he knew that it was too early for any news to break because it wouldn't be in his mind. But, yeah, a rough few days for Milos Raonic as a Raptors fan as well. So, yeah, he was down. He was really down. I mean, he said he also ran out of gas at the Australian Open when he lost in the quarterfinals there to Luca Pui. So he's saying it's now, this is twice this season, at crucial moments that he's faded at the worst possible time. And he's going to sit down. He's a very kind of cerebral guy, constantly kind of trying to find out how to maximize his potential, and he's fallen. I mean, this is going to sting for a while, to have the opportunity that was lying there in front of him to be favored to make a semifinal at Wimbledon. You just don't know how many chances you're going to get like this as you move forward. So he was really down, and he just, you know, it's funny, he said it played out exactly how he said it would before the match. He's like, listen, I can't get into long rallies, I can't let this guy feel good. And as soon as, you know, Pella got a read on his serve and started to extend some of the points, even though he wasn't winning the games, he was starting to get into a rhythm, and eventually he was able to get back in the match. And once the momentum got going that way, Raonic was in trouble.
And Mark, he looked as good in week one as he's looked in years.
Yeah, for sure. It was incredible. You know, before the tournament, he sounded pretty down. He was coming off this back injury. Even though he made, you know, the semis at Stuttgart, he had to withdraw before he would have played Felix Auger-Aliassime. And then he made the quarters at Queen's Club, but he had a cortisone shot for his back. He was doing acupuncture. It was really bothering. It was lower, then it was upper back pain. He was having massages every day, and he just could not get it feeling good. And, you know, the first round had held up all right. The second round was feeling even better. The third round, it was practically, you know, fine. And when Milos, you know, before the tournament, he said, I haven't played one tournament this year where I felt healthy during it, from start to finish, which has to be tremendously frustrating. And he really seemed to, he was, by the time we talked to him on the Friday, you know, he was just a completely different tone when it came to his health. So, very disappointing. The fact that he'd gotten through the first round so efficiently, and then that the draw had opened up with Sasha Zverev and Kevin Anderson and even Karen Khachanov losing all the top seed. He was the top seed left in that quarter and seemed to be on a collision path with Novak Djokovic. So it's a huge opportunity squandered.
I mean, Mark, when you look at his career, I mean, he's 28 years old now. We remember him as a young guy bursting onto the scene, but he's not that anymore. And we obviously, we see guys like Federer playing masterfully into their late 30s. But at what point are you concerned that, you know, if endurance and injury prevention are the concerns here, that age isn't going to help this? And there may be a tipping point where progress is going to be difficult.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big concern, I would think, for him, is that the window might be closing a little bit, and certainly there's the young generation coming up behind him. There was the belief, you know, coming in here that we might see the passing of the guard. Félix Auger-Aliassime could have passed him to become the number one ranked Canadian. It did not happen here, but he's charging hard, and there's obviously the other young guys I mentioned, Zverev, you know, Dominic Thiem, Stefanos Tsitsipas, who are coming up, who are seen as maybe more prominent contenders to win a Grand Slam right now. And I think that he's still a contender if he's healthy at Wimbledon, for sure. The Australian Open's been the other tournament that he's been a real threat at, and it falls at the beginning of the season where he's coming off the off season and he's rested and he's usually healthy at that time. And then, of course, Wimbledon, you know, tends to favor his game. So Wimbledon is probably a place where even later in his career, if he catches lightning in a bottle, kind of does what Marin Cilic did in the 2014 U.S. Open and play just out of his mind for 2 weeks, he can win that Grand Slam. But the opportunities are starting to dry up for sure, and that's got to be a concern that weighs on him.
I don't know that Raonic gets credit for being as good as he was. And I don't want to say at his peak, because that might still come. But when you look back at his career to this point, there's so many near misses like today. Right? There's there's so many times when you say, not that Raonic got beaten by Nadal or Federer or Djokovic, but he was right there and didn't close the deal.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's been rough. It's been a rough go for him. I mean, you do think about his career, and it's pretty remarkable to rise to number three in the world at one point in this golden age of tennis. You can't take a lot away from him. I mean, he's maximized, you know, the body that he has does not necessarily translate well to tennis. He's a big guy. He's clopping all over the court. And I think that he has worked hard to improve his movements, to make sure that he's getting the most out of his body. But there's been just moments, you know, five setters don't necessarily lend themselves to his style play, to his body type, and he's worn down and lost some real heartbreakers, and I'm sure that just will fuel him more. But yeah, there's been a few that I'm sure are going to haunt him when his career is done.
So what do you? I mean, obviously Felix had a nice tournament going there, a lot of hope that he's going to be the next great Canadian player. Obviously Shapovalov will have something to say about that, but what do you make of his rise here, and what can we look forward to for the rest of the summer for him?
Yeah, I think he's probably the best prospect Canada's ever produced in tennis at this age, to have the hype around him and to have backed it up for a good chunk. Now, it's interesting, he was pretty honest when he lost on Friday, when he lost to Hugo Humbert, who's someone who's ranked in the 60s, who he's favored to beat. And he said, you know, I basically, you know, let the pressure get to me, and I had just a terrible day, one of my worst days of the year. And, he was really down, because he would have played Djokovic today, and that was a big moment, and everyone was expecting him to get there. But he's really captivated. He seems to have everything, right? He's already physically mature. That seems to be the perfect build for it. He moves amazing on the court. He has all the weapons. His serve is excellent, and he had a tremendous grass court season. Grass is usually a surface that can take a while. Even Milos Raonic, who has a game for grass, took a few Wimbledons to get comfortable on the surface. It's slick, harder to move, and he made a final in Stuttgart, made a semifinal at Queen's Club, and has really seemed to be a mature kid and handled all the hype and handled everything well. Certainly, there's still growing pains to come, but just in terms of whoever you talk to on the grounds, like you go by, you know, reporters or even other players, and they're like, this kid is, he's going to be special. So there's high hopes for him. You never know. Right now, the one of the big storylines just in general in tennis is that the young generation can't seem to break through, against the big three. And even today, it was kind of, they were toying with their opponents, the big three, Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, only faced one break point combined in just smoking their opponents today in the round of 16, and it looks like they're all going to get through. So Felix is a guy who's definitely the face, one of the faces of that next generation, and one of the guys, you know, Djokovic himself said he's my favorite next generation guy. He's the guy that I think I have the most highest hopes for. So that's really high praise from Novak Djokovic for Felix Auger-Aliassime.
The big three have won the last 10 Grand Slams in men's singles. Incredible. You go back to Stan Wawrinka at the U.S. Open in 2016 to find the last guy not in the big three. So you've been in London now for, what, 10 days?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
What's the most interesting thing you've done in London?
Interesting thing we've done. Last night we had a lovely dinner. Our landlord here that the flat we rented invited us over. I'm with photojournalist Dean Willers, who went up there. We were saying we're going to stay for 5 minutes, and we ended up staying the whole night, had a lovely chat with his family. They had said it was a party, and we were the only ones who showed up.
That's the most interesting thing you've done in London in a week. You went to someone's house for dinner. You went to your house for dinner.
Well, it's two floors up. Other than obviously watching the great tennis that has been on display at the All England Club. But, yes, that's been off the court the most interesting thing, I would say.
That's riveting stuff, Bastion, I tell you. What a life.
You are just living the life, my friend.
Yeah, you know, it's a thrill, a second joy ride out here at the All England Club at SW19, as you said. So I'm just trying to keep my head, you know.
Yeah, you do that, young man.
Hey, try and fit a trivia night in or something.
Yeah, trivia. I went to a shoe polish store.
Don't blow yourself out, Mark. All right, TSN's least interesting man, Mark Masters. Keep up the good work. Keep watching the tennis. We'll see you later.
Will do.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. You know, sometimes you send guys on the road and just... Good for him, huh?
At least you came on the show, you're talking about the Irish whiskey you got from in a bet with an NHL GM. This the sports media business used to be filled with, you know, hard drinking,
cigarettes,
fun-loving, crazy living guys. And now it's just guys like Masters and Siegel.
He brings Tupperware to every Leaf game.
That's true.
People don't know that. Mark Masters brings his dinner in a Tupperware container every night to Leaf game.
It's generally like a sandwich.
It's like what you'd feed a rabbit. It's like celery and
celery,
carrots.
Maybe a red pepper now and then if he's feeling crazy. Like, that's what this media industry has become. What's wrong with us?
I know, like in the old days, who were your mentors? Like when you came along in 98.
I mean, Dave Perkins. Now, Perk had some fun times. You want to hear some stories about drinking with Billy Martin and, you know, after a Yankee game back in the 70s.
I went to the Masters with Perkins.
Oh, those early 90s. Times. You'll have a good time if you're with Perkins.
Yeah.
Not with Masters. You'd have a terrible time with Masters.
You'd have a very clean,
it'd be pleasant.
Yeah.
You love Masters, like you'll treat him like your brother, like he's a great guy, but he's no fun.
No, like that's the thing, right? Like you and I, we've been in Helsinki, we were in Prague together.
That's right.
Like,
those were good times.
We've had good times. I think he just works a lot.
He just works too much.
Well, I don't think you can say that. I think we need to emphasize that
just enough.
Having a good work ethic is very important, but it's okay to go out and have some fun once in a while.
Well, that's the thing. You got to fit it
now,
in.
Now, the guys in the old days, so I started in 83 in Alberta. When guys would show up with both eyes in one socket, for the night before, and couldn't see what was going on, that was a different time.
My early days in the 90s, even, you would still have guys who had like a bottle of whiskey in their desk drawer.
And chain smoking.
And would pull it out
and chain smoking on the air.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you went to bed at 10, like when I started out, if you were on the road with the crew, if you went to bed at 10 o'clock, like you were ostracized.
Yes, exactly. Like it was your professional duty to put a shift in at night.
Yeah, and play guilty the next day.
You have to. I mean, we did not pass that down, is what I'm saying. It's probably on us, the guys who are sort of not the oldest guys. No, we didn't pass it down to the younger guys like Masters and Siegel, and now they're living like rabbits.
I think generally in life, people aren't, and probably for the better, it's probably better that people don't live. Like, you know, 24-ounce steaks are not good for you.
They're not?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know,
now and then it can't hurt.
Stay up till 3 a.m. drinking large amounts of alcohol is not good for you.
Not every night.
And I don't smoke, but I mean, you know, obviously smoking's not good for you.
Apparently not.
No, although it does give you a good. I mean, We have a couple minutes here. So Dan Kelly, the legendary, the late Dan Kelly. I had dinner with him one night, a group of us, at Bookbinders in Philadelphia. Legendary Philly steakhouse.
For sure.
He smoked like 6 or 7 cigarettes. He had, I don't know, 4 or 5 beers. And when his meal came, it was a steak with a baked potato and asparagus. Mm-hmm. And there was a butter stick on the table. He put a cube of butter on his asparagus, a cube of butter on his potato, and then he buttered his steak. I'd never seen anyone butter a steak before.
Butter the steak? Well,
he buttered his steak.
Some of the fancy joints still have that compound butter on top of the steak.
That was old school broadcasting.
Yeah, butter, it turns out, it's not bad.
We'll bring it back. You're back here on Friday? We'll bring it back. You come in. I want you to come in hungover as a rat. I want you to reek of alcohol wearing the same clothes you wore the night before when you come in on Friday. Okay?
Sounds good. I'll try. I'll try my best.
All right, there you go. You're using Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and watching on TSN 2.